Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Friday, October 21st, 2016. We are 18, is that right? 18
yes.
days from the election, thank God.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're in the home stretch. It's almost over. And we're a little burned out.
Yes.
At this stage. It's been sort of horrifying in many ways. And we had the third and final debate just a couple nights ago. Right?
Yeah. And, on Wednesday.
On Wednesday. And I guess we should talk about that.
Oh, my God. Do we have to?
Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah. So we'd had the debate, and it was awful. As expected, having watched the first two, I thought, you know, Trump is a, you know, he's horrible in debates. But compared to the first and second ones, I thought he did better. He didn't have any complete meltdowns really till the very end.
See, I disagree with that, but...
But you didn't watch the second one.
Not in full, no. That's
second
true.
Second one was a disaster. I mean, this was a disaster, too. Clinton ruined him. I mean, she completely destroyed him in these debates. That's the end of the story. There's no pundit on earth that could convince me otherwise. But he was the most, I don't know, polished, calm...
Yeah, but that is grading on such a curve.
Oh, it is, right? I mean, he's horrible at debating. He's horrible, especially at being confronted by a woman who does not back down. And there's this really great Ezra Klein piece that you should watch, everyone, that kind of goes through how she took him down and how she systematically and strategically took him out using his own weaknesses.
Yeah.
And
yeah, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, she did everything she did on purpose, and he walked into every trap just as she set them. And yeah, he looks like an idiot, and she looks like the next president. So
yeah, I mean, a lot of the scientific polls came out said she won by anywhere from 10 to 15 points this final debate.
Yeah,
which to me is madness. How it's not like 80-20.
Right.
But again, they're grading Trump on a curve.
Yeah.
But his policy discussions didn't make any sense. They were just gobbledygook.
Mm-hmm.
It was just word salad, stream of consciousness.
Totally incoherent.
Didn't make any sense.
Yep.
And I thought it was a disaster. And it kind of boggles my mind how anybody can consider that even sort of close to a real debate.
Right. No. None of them were.
Yeah.
None of them. I mean, every question he was asked in every debate that he did, he has no answer for because he doesn't have any policies or proposals. He's not a politician, as he's so fond of saying, but he doesn't even seem to have any working for him, people that could even... Or maybe he does, and he just is completely unable to retain that kind of information and spill it back out when the question is asked. I don't know, but...
Well, it's sort of become a hyper-parody echo chamber campaign.
Yeah.
Where it's just feeding off each other and making their most strident supporters really happy, and nothing else matters and nothing else counts. And so it's just a reflection of that.
Right.
Which, again, and we're going to get into polling a little later, but... The polling says Hillary's going to win by a substantial margin, but it should be way more. And there's some people that think it might be way more, despite what the polls are saying. We'll get into that. But the two big takeaways, well, the two big cringeworthy moments from the debate are one, when Trump was asked, "Will you accept the results of the election?" And he's like, "I don't know, maybe. I'll keep you in suspense."
Yeah, I'll let you know after the election.
Right. Which is ridiculous. Chris, it's a completely unacceptable answer.
Right. Chris Wallace came back and was like, "I'm sorry, I'm going to back up for a second. Like, you're saying that you're not necessarily going to cede to the peaceful transition of power. Like, that's the most undemocratic thing, essentially, that you can say." And he not only stuck to his guns that night, but has doubled down in the days following the debate.
He said, "I'll accept the results if I win.
If I win."
And it like almost seems like a joke, but it's not the sort of thing you can joke about when you're running for president.
And That's the thing. I'm so, so, so excited for this election to be over. And then I think, even when it's over on November 9th, it's not over. You know, like, he doesn't have to concede, really, because he's not already in a position of power. It's not as though Obama is saying, I'm not going to transition to Hillary. You know what I mean? Like, he's just some jackass from Celebrity Apprentice or whatever. But I think it's important that his supporters understand that the election, this whole notion of the election being rigged and the media rigging it, and that he's basically preparing this narrative for when he loses.
Yeah.
But the narrative he's preparing is really dangerous, because his supporters are going to listen to that.
But they're not going to organize, and they're not going to, like, storm Washington. I mean, they've been talking about this bullshit forever. The Obama birthers and everything are going to form a posse and, you know, kick down the door of the Capitol. They're not.
Of course not.
A few crazies might do something crazy. They might protest, but for the most part, they're going to go home and curse. And they're also going to tune into what's next. And Trump is going to parlay this into Trump TV, or the Trump media empire.
Yeah. Yep.
He's going to do what Sarah Palin did.
Right.
Which I think Rachel Maddow laid out tonight. He's not going to stay in politics. He's not going to run for senator of New York or
governor. He doesn't want to be a public servant.
No, this was a big vanity project. He wants to get something out of this. So what he's going to get out of this is the Trump TV network. And they did the soft launch of that the other night before the debate on Facebook.
Which I didn't know anything about at the time. So I haven't seen it, or I have no idea what the content was.
Supposedly raised a bunch of money, but...
Well, I mean, he's definitely galvanized a viewership.
Of course.
Through this election, right?
Yeah, like, that Fox News is not right-wing enough for them anymore.
Right.
Except for Hannity, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, now Roger Ailes is gone, and there's a vacuum of right-wing TV, maybe, I guess.
I disagree, but okay.
That's what he thinks.
Well, it's not even right-wing. It's like alt-right.
Alt-right, uber-nationalist.
Uber-nationalist, sexist, misogynist, racist, xenophobic.
Even more so than Fox News.
Anti-Semitic.
Which it's hard for us to wrap our heads around, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's...
No, like the James O'Keefe Undercover Hour.
Are they
going to
give Rush Limbaugh his own show and, like...
No, Rush has his own thing going. He doesn't need that, but, like, they'll have, like, the alt-right hour, the Steve Bannon, you know... The
that
Holocaust
Milo
didn't
guy,
happen hour,
the
Milo
Yiannopoulos. Yeah, he can have his own show, or he just hates
there's
women.
There's no such thing as rape hour. I mean, no, really. It's going to be a horror show for the ages. And
he's
it'll be
testing his audience for the last 18 months to
and
see
ready.
What they will and won't tolerate. And the answer appears to be literally anything. So they seem to be sort of foaming at the mouth.
Yeah.
Waiting, wanting this sort of language and talk and rhetoric.
Oh, absolutely.
So why not make a television empire out of just hate?
And it'll go, we talked about this, it'll go one of two ways in that either it'll be this horrible, organized, right-wing, just alt-right, horrible, horrible, terrifying, nationalist, neo-Nazi channel, or it'll be like laughably like Biff Tannen TV.
Right. We were like, talking about like Idiocracy, like just people punching each other in the balls and like just
interspersed with like North Korea style imagery of Trump.
Right. You know? And like, you know, horrible sexist and racist caricatures of the Obamas and Clinton and
all the things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be horrifying no matter what it is, but
it could be truly silly though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably not to Trump, but...
But so, my question, I guess, is who's going to air this?
Anybody who wants to make money, Viacom. If you can promise 20 million people are going to tune in a night, which they would for the first few months at least, you bet it's going to show up on your DirecTV and your cable.
You really think so?
Oh, yeah.
You think these companies are going to want to associate themselves with this kind of... rhetoric?
When they see the viewership, and then, you know, Mike Huckabee will advertise, he'll hawk his diabetes stuff, and Glenn Beck will, well, no, Glenn Beck hates Trump, I guess, but somebody else will hawk their bunkers, you know, their fallout gold and ration packs and
oh my God.
Water purifiers and doomsday prep stuff and all the things. So it'll be just your crazy uncle's television network for real.
And like my dad would love it.
And I think it might be even be too much for your dad. I am morbidly curious to like see what it would look like, and it would have to look like that. It can't just be as quote normal as Fox News, because
before this election is like crazy right wing propaganda for anyone with a brain, and now after the election, we're talking about Fox News being a kind of
big sort of journalistic voice of reason normal on the right?
center point of reason. Like, what the hell is happening? It's madness.
Yeah, because there's no reason for CNN to keep employing Corey Lewandowski after the election, so he'll need a home now that he's a TV personality, and Jeffrey Lord and and Katrina Pearson and all these wonderful, wonderful people. They need a home.
Oh my God.
So we can look forward to that.
So the other thing at the debate was his last comment. He leaned into the mic, apparently, and said, Hillary Clinton is a nasty woman.
He said, what a nasty woman, or you're a nasty woman. I think he said, what a nasty woman.
Yeah.
When she was talking about his tax plan or something, like, it was just something that did not inspire that. It was like, she was giving some wonky thing and said, and, you know, under Trump's plan, the taxes would go up for something like that. And he leans in and he goes, such a nasty woman.
Right.
And we were just like, I mean, we weren't even shocked. If it was the first debate, we probably all would have had the gas. But now it's just like, yeah, all that's right. Trump.
Fine, sure. Oh, and he also said something about bad hombres at one point.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the bad hombres.
Yeah, that one's my other
favorite. He was
talking
about the immigration or something, and he said, you know, let me tell you, we got some bad hombres here.
Yeah.
And that blew up Twitter. And then I commented, imagine the bad hombres with taco trucks on every corner.
Yes.
That's the nightmare.
Well, that was the other funny thing was that the night of the debate, a bunch of union members from the Service Workers Union in Las Vegas came out and parked a wall of taco trucks outside of Trump's hotel where he was staying.
Nice.
To protest, which I thought was hilarious.
Now, granted, it wasn't even Trump that made the taco truck comment. It was
a surrogate
who
care.
Then got kicked off the Latinos for Trump Council or whatever crap that was.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, that's pretty funny.
Doesn't matter. Plus, he's already had taco things anyway with the taco bowl.
The taco bowl was this Hispanic outreach thing or something.
That's like the least authentic dish
the Trump
ever,
Tower, $18 taco
God.
Bowl.
Yeah, so that was funny. And then there's been a bunch of memes and T-shirts and stuff with Nasty Woman and Bad Hombres. And it's been pretty fun to watch. So those were kind of like the big things. Otherwise, I don't really like, it's just nonsense. He just talks shit and she sounds smart. And it's the same policy positions you've heard from her.
We're obviously...
Like, oh, except for... Was this the one where she was really, really good on choice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's one thing that I really appreciated. He started spouting some fucking bullshit about
late-term abortions and how... You get an abortion the day the baby's set to be born.
And you rip this live baby out of the womb and kill it and just bullshit. And Clinton came back and was just, I mean, as pro-choice as you could want a person to be.
Right.
And forceful and like, I will protect women's right to choose. I will appoint justices that will protect it, like, without any equivocation at all whatsoever. And then there have been a lot of stories recently after the debate that have come out in the last couple days about women sharing their actual late-term abortion stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they're absolutely heartbreaking. And it's absolutely not the same kind of thing that we're talking about when we talk about early term abortions. And there's been a lot of like clarity about that in the media, which I've really appreciated. Because what he said was fundamentally untrue and hurtful and harmful. And
well, that's just it, right? The issues get completely overshadowed by this circus that is the Trump campaign.
Right,
and
right.
We don't even talk about it. Like Chris Wallace didn't even bring up climate change.
Right.
It wasn't time because we were talking about groping and raping and all the other crap.
Ripping babies out of wombs of women. And, you know, he said something earlier in the week about Hillary Clinton was going to make all women have abortions. And like,
even if you're not pregnant,
you just have to go in for the procedure in Hillary Clinton's America. So it was a real shit show. I really did appreciate, though, her sort of unequivocal stance on choice. And
they talked for a long time on guns, too. And no one's even talking about it because it got so overshadowed.
Yeah. She's not going to take your guns away.
Well, so, they don't believe that.
And yeah.
They're still waiting for Obama to come.
Doesn't matter, come really, because no, nothing I say makes any difference on that subject, because they've decided, and that's that.
Decided that Democrats will always come and take your guns away, even though they never have.
Right.
And that
I mean, this is a huge fight my dad and I had back in 2008 when that movie, I guess it was 2012 when the movie 2016 came out, that faux documentary that was anti-Obama.
Oh, right.
Mom and I were having this conversation in the car, and she was like, I just really want you to watch it. And I said, okay.
Right, because he's going to put them in a concentration camp for being conservative or white.
We'll watch that movie with you in 2016 when none of it came true. How's that sound? And she was like, done, because all of it's going to have come true if you elect your guy. And literally, I'm sure zero of the things in this movie have come
true. I saw bits and pieces. One of them was, I think, a one-world government.
Yep.
And one of them was taking the guns away. And one of them was putting Christians in concentration camps.
Right, because he's a secret Muslim. And, yeah, no, I mean, it was very, like, doom and gloom and of course, ridiculous. And I promised her, I was like, I would love to watch that movie with you in 2016.
She's not going to remember that.
Well, I brought it up the other night. And I said, hey, you want to watch that movie 2016? And she's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
and I was like, that documentary that you were certain.
That Obama was going to take your gun and put you in a concentration camp. The economy was going to collapse. Yeah, and
the world was literally going to be a wasteland if we reelected Barack Obama. Remember that? And she was like, vaguely. And I was like, yeah, I bet, vaguely. Let's watch it. I promised you I'd watch it in 2016. And she was like, don't be a smartass. So, okay. I guess we're not doing that.
But no, well, I think you and I should watch it.
Oh, I think we should
that's
too.
That's going to be amazing.
We should do like a commentary track on it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, we
that's
can do
a
that.
Good idea. Maybe get Pierre back involved.
Right?
If he's still around. So anything else on the debate? I mean, it was what it was. I mean, everybody's mind was pretty much made up, and Hillary won the last debate, so whatever.
Yeah, and she went up in the polls, and she's going to win, and that doesn't mean you don't get to vote. That means you have to
fucking
definitely go vote.
Polls might show some tightening in the last 2 weeks because they just do naturally.
But
usually.
Yeah, I mean, other than
although
that,
a lot of people claim there's one more really horrible, awful Trump shoe to drop in terms of a recording. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't.
Well, Flint offered $1 million for anyone who could produce audio or video recording of Trump doing something sexually derogatory or demeaning.
Yeah, but he did the same thing for W, and that never came to fruition.
He did, although I think that one was a little bit different, but yeah, and nothing ever came of it.
It was like proof of Bush's cocaine use or something, but whatever.
Yeah, but Bush wasn't really, like, he doesn't strike me as like a pervert, you know what I mean? He doesn't
strike me as a guy that
like...
not a sex pervert.
He
used to be a drunk, and he used to do cocaine.
For sure. But he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who...
possibly raped a 13-year-old girl and had,
like,
a 17-year-old naked girl at his Trump vodka event.
Right, no. I hate that man, but I don't think that... there's any sexual impropriety going on with George W. Bush. But everyone, of course, I mean, of course, certainly Trump, obviously, as evidence.
Well, I thought the speculation was that what was on tape was Trump using the N-word and being really racist.
He has like 100% of the African-American vote voting against him.
Well, that's not the point.
It's the white ladies.
No, there's a much larger point I want to make with that, if that tape came out. For the most part, I hope it kind of doesn't. I mean, we are divided enough as it is right now.
Yeah.
Because the problem is that tape would come out and a bunch more Republicans would finally jump ship, you know, congressmen and whatever.
Yeah.
But a bunch wouldn't. And his voters wouldn't. And now what do we do?
Right.
Like...
Like, we've already traumatized women. Let's not start traumatizing other minorities to believing that their country doesn't give a shit about them.
Well, yeah, kind of traumatizing everybody. Like, no. A third of or more of the country really doesn't care and really feels this way. Oh, my God, that's not what we thought. Now, it would force some of the Beltway punditry to maybe finally acknowledge that. But, God, we're already wounded and divided enough.
Yeah.
So part of me wants that to come to light to prove that point, and part of me is like, enough is enough.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
Because tell me I'm wrong.
No.
Like, you would like to think, oh my God, the tape came out and Trump is using the N-word and being a horrible racist on tape. Now he's going to lose by 20 or 30 points, but he won't. He'll still lose by 8 to 10.
Yes.
And so he'll have roughly 80 million Americans who voted for him saying, I don't care.
Doesn't matter. Not the point. Not the bigger issue. Which is, no, it is traumatizing to even think that that could happen, but you're exactly right. That's what would happen.
Yeah.
Without question. Yeah.
Like, look here, poll, 63% say Trump committed sexual assault, but he's not going to lose this race 63-37.
Nope. He sure isn't.
So
some percentage of people believe that he committed sexual assault, and they're still going to vote for him.
For president of the United States.
That's
now,
insane.
Now, of course, 98% of those people are men, probably.
Yep.
But that's cold comfort. There's men is one of every two people roughly in the world. I mean, that doesn't help Rachel when she walks outside, does it?
No. No, it does not. It upsets me that any one of those 63% of people who believes that and is a woman would still vote for him. That's
truly really upsetting, crazy, but not that surprising. Right?
But no, that doesn't help me. That doesn't make me feel better.
Yeah, because all you have to do is run the numbers, right? If it's 63%, so that's, you know, roughly 15 to 20% of that are going to vote for Trump anyway. Maybe that's one in every 10 men. How many men do you encounter on a daily basis? 20, 30, 40?
Right. It's terrifying already.
Yeah.
It's already terrifying to just walk around in the world, which is actually a really good segue into the thing that I want to read from Dan Savage, which I think is absolutely brilliant. Dan Savage of the Savage Love cast and the column in The Stranger Savage Love. I'm sure you all know who he is. If you don't, you've been living in a hole somewhere and you should crawl out and go find out who he is because he's my hero. So he does a sex and love and relationship and life advice column. And this is the letter that came in this week that he just published. Waiting to pay for my groceries at the market this evening, this guy, stinking of booze, says to my 9-year-old daughter, quote, sweetheart, can you put the divider thing here for me? I move close to my daughter. He then reaches his hand over me, wraps his arm around her, saying, now you be nice to your mommy, sweetie. I pluck his hand off. Do not touch my child, I say. My other hand is pressed against my daughter's ribs, and I can feel her heart pounding. You have a beautiful daughter, he says. The cashier, whom we know, a guy, looks at me, eyebrows up. I roll my eyes. So pissed. We leave. Quote, I hated that man, my daughter says once we get into the car. He smelled bad. I wanted to hit him. If anyone ever does that to me again, I'm going to scream. Here we go. She says, sometimes you have to be hypervigilant, I tell my daughter, because some gross men out there feel they are entitled to touch us. And then I share my story, when I was a little girl, dot, dot, dot. To be honest, I don't even remember the first time it happened to me. I don't remember the last time some pervert rubbed up against me either, but that's what you have to deal with when you're a girl. You have to learn to brush this shit off to make sure that this endless assault course of predators doesn't take one bit of your pride, your confidence, or your sense of peace as you walk through the world. I'm so angry. We should call this the Trump talk. The depressing conversation that every parent needs to have with their little girl about revolting, predatory, entitled men. The Trump talk.
Yeah, like the talk with the black teenage kids and the cops.
Yep.
Here we go.
Here's what Dan has to say, and I love it. I'm sorry about what happened to your daughter at the grocery store. I'm sorry about what was done to your daughter by that entitled asshole at the grocery store. But I'm glad you were there with her when it happened. The author, Kelly Oxford, in response to Donald Trump's horrific comments about sexually assaulting women, called on women to tweet about their first assaults under the hashtag #NotOkay. Oxford's post went viral. More than 1 million women responded. We talked about this last week.
Mm-hmm.
And reading through this seemingly endless thread, you'll be struck by how many women were alone the first time they were assaulted. Oxford herself was alone the first time. Quote, old man on a city bus grabs my pussy and smiles at me. I'm 12.
Oh.
A lot of women I know, including some very close friends, were your daughter's age the first time it happened to them, but they were alone. Tragically, many assumed that they had done something wrong, that they had invited this on themselves somehow, and most didn't go to their parents for fear of getting into trouble. And when it inevitably happened again, some became convinced they were indeed to blame, that they were bringing this on themselves somehow because they thought it wasn't happening to anyone else, just to them. So thank God you were with your daughter, there to pull that asshole's hands off her, there to protect her from worse, and there to help her process the experience. And in that car ride home, you inoculated your daughter with your message. You are a human being, and you have a right to move through this world unmolested. Before gross predators could infect her with theirs, you are only an object, and we have a right to touch you. I want to live in a world where this sort of thing doesn't happen to anyone's daughter. But until we do, every little girl should be so lucky as to have a trusted adult standing by, ready to intervene when it does happen. Regarding your suggestion, I've received roughly 10 million emails begging for us to do to Donald Trump what we did to Rick Santorum. My readers and I redefined Santorum, quote, the frothy mixture of lube and fecal matter that is sometimes the result, byproduct of anal sex. People even sent in suggestions. Trump is the streak of shit a large turd sometimes leaves on the bottom of the toilet bowl.
That's a good one.
Trump is the snot that sometimes runs out of your nose when you're giving a blowjob. Trump is a guy so hopelessly inept in bed that no woman or man wants him no matter how rich he is. The suggested new meanings all struck me as trivial and snarky. And I don't think there's anything trivial about the racism, sexism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, and violence that Trump has mainstreamed and normalized, and I'm not inclined to snark about it.
Yeah.
And besides, Trump already has a slang meaning. It means to fart audibly in Great Britain, and that definition is already in the Oxford English Dictionary. And it frankly didn't seem possible to me to make Donald Trump's name any more revolting than he already has. If I may paraphrase the amazing letter the New York Times sent to Trump after he demanded they retract a story about the women he's assaulted, nothing I could say in my sex column could even slightly elevate the feelings of disgust that decent people experience whenever they hear his name. Mr. Trump, through his own words and actions, has already redefined his last name. But then your email arrived, and I set aside the column I was already working on to rush to your idea into print. Because your suggestion, that parents call the conversation they have to have with their daughters about predatory and entitled men, the Trump talk, is not trivial, and it's not snarky. It has gravitas, and here's hoping Trump talk isn't just widely adopted, but universally practiced. Because no little girl who gets groped on a bus or in a grocery store or on a subway or in a classroom should ever have to wonder if she did something wrong.
Very well said.
Thank you, Dan Savage.
Thank you, Dan Savage.
It's exactly correct. And for any of you out there who have kids, boys and girls, I'm going to say, please have the Trump talk. That gross entitled men sometimes feel like they get to touch you, whether you're a boy or a girl. And then if you have little boys, I would encourage you to encourage them not to become those gross men.
But on that subject, none of this has dissuaded Marco Rubio from still supporting Trump.
God.
He came out today, in fact, and said Trump is doing better in Florida than people realize. I don't know what that is supposed to mean. Is that a threat or what? No, it's a kiss to the Trump voters in Florida to please come vote for him. Because he's in the fight of his life with my friend Patrick Murphy.
Right.
I think my gut tells me Rubio will probably still hang on, but it's very close.
Okay.
Obviously, hopefully he loses, but so the sexual assault, the tape, his horrible positions on everything, his personal insults against Marco Rubio, and the fact that he broke the Cuba embargo to do business illegally there has not dissuaded Marco Rubio from supporting Donald Trump.
Well, of course not.
Just keep that in mind. He's not the only one, of course.
No. And... It's not like I believe for a moment that Marco Rubio likes Donald Trump.
No,
that he
of course
wants
not.
Him to be president.
He needs his voters to survive in the Senate.
Right.
He absolutely does.
So it's absolutely politically pandering.
He can't abandon him. There's just not enough moderates and crossover Dems. He needs the Trump base in Florida to win.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I keep forgetting, you know, this is a Senate race, so this is statewide.
Yep.
So that's people in parts of Florida Rubio's probably never set foot in.
Right. Florida's a big state.
Florida is a big state with a lot of rednecks.
Yeah.
And a lot of Trump supporters, not enough to win it for Trump. I think Hillary's going to win by a couple points. But
really? Florida?
Yeah.
Wow.
But,
that's amazing.
Rubio still is clinging on to a slim lead because A, Murphy kind of has his own problems, and B, he's just not well known enough.
Right.
And a lot of Senate races are just known quantity. Like here in Colorado, yep. I don't necessarily think Bennett is all that popular, but they know him.
Right.
And he's done all right for the state. And
right.
He's
been able to sort of, in his commercials, look like he works
across the aisle
because he's a pretty liberal Democrat. And
yeah, but nobody in this state will go against the oil lobby.
No.
Nobody.
Nope.
We know firsthand
yes.
shit we're not at liberty to talk about.
Correct.
That the Democrats in the state of Colorado are just as complicit
just as
the Republicans.
To the fracking and fracking oil and energy yes. lobby as the Republicans are, period.
100%.
Yes.
Nobody dares yep. touch it because it's responsible for so much of the economy here.
And even when you try to touch it, it gets killed.
Yeah. It's explosive.
Yep.
It's not a thing right now yet in Colorado that they feel they can stand up to.
That's right.
Which is unfortunate.
It is, very.
But it's a political reality, and We're not excusing it. We're just saying that's how it is. And just we'll continue right to fight now, against it.
That is the way it is.
That is the
period. End of story.
We know from the highest levels of government that is how it is here in Colorado and probably in a lot of other energy dependent states. I mean, we're not even talking about, obviously, like North Dakota is already a really red state, you know, I mean, so it's not that much of an issue. Obviously, there's a lot of shit going on there now.
Right.
But in terms of like the voters, there's no question that anybody running for any kind of office in North Dakota.
But in Colorado, the voters have spoken again and again and again about wanting to have local control and wanting to be able to prevent fracking in their local communities. And they keep getting sued by the state government, controlled by Democrats in many cases. John Hickenlooper is suing local communities. John Hickenlooper is our governor, and he's a Democrat.
Yeah. Fairly liberal on most things.
Yes. Not this.
And this goes all the way down, not just Bennett and the other senators.
Nope.
And congressional
House members. There are state reps. Members. There are.
The state reps, the people running for state reps.
Yep.
Nobody wants to mess with the energy.
Everybody needs that money, and nobody's going to stand up to them.
And the energy industry will run so many negative ads against you so fast.
Yep.
And it works because there's a lot of energy jobs. It's a huge part of the Colorado economy.
Absolutely. And because we have so much rural open space up in northeastern Colorado.
Yeah.
That's privately held. There's a lot of individuals who benefit from and profit from leasing their land out to fracking companies.
Oh, yeah.
And so
sometimes they get screwed on it, too.
They do, and sometimes their water catches on fire, but and their property values go down, and they can't get out of their toxic home anymore. But nobody talks about that here. Like, it is just an issue that, like, voters don't like it, but nobody cares what voters think, basically, about this one issue in Colorado. So, anyway.
It's on the ballot in some confusing ways here. Now, we got our ballot. we were going to maybe talk about that. Mm-hmm. And maybe we will in the second half, since we have one in our hot little hands.
Yes.
Oh, that reminds me. So, the other day, I forget if it was Monday or Tuesday, both Trump and Pence were here in Colorado, mostly Colorado Springs.
Yes.
And
which is a very conservative part of the state.
Yes. And Mike Pence urged his followers to get involved and go to the polls and watch the polls to check out for any funny business.
Yeah. Voter fraud.
Now, the problem with that is we no longer have polls in Colorado. Everything is by mail.
Not
as
an
of
option to go to the poll. You can't go anywhere. You can't. There's nowhere to go. There's no polling stations. You can go drop your ballot off at a drop box that's unmanned.
I guess you could sit there and watch that.
I guess you could sit there and make sure no brown people put their ballot in there, but that's not a thing you're allowed to do.
Yeah.
So
we don't know what Mike Pence was talking about, other than
huge gaffe.
Maybe he's not the, quote, smart one in this equation. Maybe there is no smart one.
Yeah, well, that's for sure, right? Yeah. Yeah, so
I got a kick out of that. I thought that was really funny.
Oh,
most everybody missed it because most people outside of the state don't realize that
there's no poll here.
There's no polling place.
It's all by mail or drop off.
At which we just received our ballots.
Yes,
2 days
yes,
ago.
They dropped on Monday. I didn't get mine. Tuesday. I got mine today. Most people got theirs yesterday or today.
The ballot is huge this year.
Well, and yours and mine are going to be a little bit different because we live in different jurisdictions.
Right.
So there's a couple things that you get to vote on that I don't and
vice versa.
But there's some interesting stuff this year on the Colorado ballot. We can talk about it now or later. What do you want to...
Well, we got a good 10 minutes before the break, so...
Okay. One of the things we're doing in Colorado is we have a system called a referendum, citizen-initiated referendum, which means we get a bunch of people, get a bunch of people to sign a petition, and then it goes on the ballot.
Right.
And one of those, like, that's how we legalize pot in Colorado, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of those is a Death with Dignity Act, which is going to allow people to request medication from their doctors if they are terminally ill for 6 months, with only 6 months or less to live, and found of sound mind and can get that diagnosis from two doctors. And it's a complicated thing, but essentially it's the same thing that Oregon has, that you're allowed to to choose when you die if you are terminally ill rather than suffer through a death, which I feel very, very passionately about, in favor of that passing. So that's one of the big ones. Very contentious. There's a huge cigarette tax increase in Colorado, the biggest one that's ever been proposed. I think it's $2.82 more per pack, which Wow. would bring the total up to like $10 a pack here, which they've done in other states and had some pretty good success. I am a smoker and I plan to vote for it because it is funneling a ton of money into a lot of really important, necessary social programs.
And I'm a non-smoker and I'm planning to vote for it too. Now, there have been a lot of ads against that.
Yes.
And
yes.
Is that the tobacco lobby?
It is. I've also seen some local, like, Chamber of Commerce people that are against it because a lot of businesses make a lot of money from selling cigarettes,
yeah.
especially like gas stations, places right. like that where I buy cigarettes. There's a lot of propaganda and materials lit in there against it.
I've seen way more ads against that than pro-Trump ads.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing in there. It's really interesting because the way that we do, we've talked about Tabor before, and I'm not going to get into it too much, but in order for this tax increase essentially to pass, we have to have voters vote on it. But as a part of Tabor, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, we also have to say what percentage of whatever money is collected goes where. And the ads against it are kind of ads against Tabor. They're saying like, oh, don't say where it's going to go now because then you can't change it later if the money...
Which is technically correct, but what
which
they're,
is,
what they're
but
not
I'm like,
explaining
well, then get rid
that...
of Tabor then. That's the problem. And they're like, it's just going to build new government bureaucracies. And I'm like, well, it's going to things like children's... like food for children during school and also like during summer.
Uh-huh.
So that low-income kids can continue to eat three meals a day when they're not in school. Things like health insurance, things like there's definitely like a 20% of it, I think, goes to smoking prevention programs and to quitting smoking programs. We have something in Colorado called the Quit Line, which is a free service that the state of Colorado started paying for from a previous increase in cigarette taxes that allows you to call into this number, get counseling, and they send you free nicotine patches or free nicotine gum like once a year. So there's all kinds of programs that we have. But it's interesting because the people that are against the tax are the tobacco lobby and conservatives who just hate taxes. But they're making kind of a liberal argument around our tax code, which I just think is very...
Well, they're making an argument that people won't be able to connect the dots with what they're saying.
Right. And then there's this other completely ridiculous argument about poor people, that, like, it'll negatively impact poor people more, which is true, and I agree. But since when did you care about that?
Well, and you care that you want to help support their smoking habits.
Right. When they're less likely to be health insured and, you know, right, yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's much
Although,
pressure.
Dana's argument would be, like, poor people are going to smoke either way, so we're just taking money out of their...
$3 more, they might be more inclined to quit. The statistics show when cigarette taxes go up, more people quit.
It's hard to be poor, and sometimes smoking is that, like, coping mechanism that's kind of all you have.
Okay.
And so are we just taking money out of their food budget or their something other budget? But again, you can quit smoking. And yeah. We have programs in Colorado that can help you do that for free. So that's why I'm voting for that.
I don't know how that's going to do. I have a feeling it'll do well. But
yeah, they usually always pass. This one's really big, so I don't know.
And how far down the ballot is it? That's another problem. This
right.
is a big ballot this
it
year,
is.
Which is bad for a lot of referendums.
It is. The more referendums there are on the ballot, the less likely any of them are to pass.
Yeah, because your average person just stops...
just doesn't have time.
Yeah.
They don't have to. They're not going to read through. You know, we get this thing called the Blue Book in Colorado, which is an explanation of everything that's going to be on your ballot.
This year, man. It's like
oh, my God. Like, we got through it in like 3 hours, and I know a lot of this stuff already. So when there's too many things on the ballot, they tend to all get voted down. Just everyone goes like, nope, too much. I don't know. It's too much
change.
Well,
because the way it
it's
works
fine
is
right now.
That
it's fine.
It needs X number of people to vote on it, right? Is that how it works?
No, it just needs
the percentage
up or down.
So they
like
just vote
anything
no
else.
All the way down.
So they just vote no on everything because yeah. they don't have time to figure out. Maybe there's like one or two things that they care about, but everything else gets a no.
So when
it's
in
like,
doubt, vote no
yes.
because it could be a tax
and
increase.
And I'm the same way. when in doubt, vote no. Back in the day when I wasn't super, like, when I was 18, I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't know what the implications of that are.
They're going to sneak in.
Yeah, right. Just like Amendment 69, which is Colorado Care.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because isn't Bernie going to be in town in a couple
Bernie
days?
Bernie and Elizabeth Warren were in town 2 days ago.
And they're coming back, too.
Probably. And they're both supporting Amendment 69, which is universal health care in Colorado. What may be surprising to our listeners is that nobody I know is voting for that.
You can go ahead and explain why.
Because there's a couple of reasons, but the reason I'm not voting for it is that there's an abortion loophole in the law, which I'm not fully prepared to explain because I don't have notes in front of me because I didn't know we were going to talk about this. But essentially, there's some troubling language in the law around abortion access for women in Colorado that would have to be changed in order to get my vote. The Democratic Party in the state agrees with me. There's also some other problems with it in terms of its execution and being paid for and things that really...
Well, here's another practical problem, right? This was one of the states that did get the Medicaid expansion.
Yes.
And so you have that and you have the marketplace.
Yes.
So the coverage rate, it's not perfect, but compared to like a bunch of other states where the Republican governors have rejected it,
we're doing okay.
We're not as dire here.
Right.
Most everybody that needs to get covered can get covered.
Yes.
And so there's not as much of an impetus like that there's massive percentages of the population like in Texas that are uncovered.
Right.
So.
And we may need to get Molly to come talk about this because she has some very strong opinions working in social work about how it's proposing to be implemented and what the impact would have on people who would be eligible for, well, I guess everyone would be eligible for it, but there's also other problems, like you'd be eligible for it if you have a job. Otherwise, it would still be Medicaid. There's a lot of problems. It's a great idea.
It's single payer, right? Is that?
It's universal health care, yeah. So, yes,
well, there's
single
a difference.
Payer,
there's a difference.
I think. I mean, what I know about it is that... I don't know if it's single payer or
no,
not.
No, I think
actually.
It's more like
it's not.
Medicaid for all, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, there's problems with it. And I get Bernie being for it because that is one of the touchstones of everything that he's wanted to do. And we're one of the only states that has it on the ballot. So he came here to support her, but also like continue the revolution or whatever.
Well, I think it's going to lose badly, but I
will.
Could be surprised.
It will.
Could be surprised.
I think the last polling I saw was that it was not doing well.
It was
well.
Like 60-30 against, right?
Yeah, because it's expensive. And that's a big thing for people in Colorado is the budget and taxes and money and all of that. So I don't think it's going to do very well, but we did not attend the Bernie Elizabeth Warren event.
Nope.
I didn't think that I could stomach being around that many Bernie bros.
Yeah, they're still out here.
Yeah. Oh, God, everywhere.
They're still yelling about voting for Greens and Gary Johnson.
Yeah, I can't.
And
I just
all the
can't.
Things.
I can't be in the same room. I can't do it. No.
We're coming up on a break here. we have the Al Smith dinner that our friend Sarah Burris wrote the lead story on for Raw Story.
Yes.
So check that out if you haven't yet. We'll discuss it a little bit. We saw some bits and pieces. I didn't sit through the whole damn thing because no. And Chris Christie is in some trouble and more homestretch talk when we come back. So stick around. We will be right back.
So I don't go and get you.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We've been joined by our friends Lily the dog, Moses the tuxedo cat, and Rigsby the cattle dog is also hanging out. And
yes.
You can hear maybe her paws on the hardwood floor as she comes over to say hi and smiles at us. So you guys have anything to add since we started recording and you came over? Nope.
No, but Moses would just like to stare at my face very intensely.
Moses the cat is stoic. And Lily the dog is sitting right behind Rachel.
Yes.
So we're surrounded by the Annapals. And, okay, now they got bored and decided to move on since we're just talking after all. All right, so where did we leave off and where are we going?
Oh, man. So the news I woke up to this morning was the Al Smith dinner.
Yes.
The Washington institution, from what I understand.
It is. Every election year.
Yes.
And it's to raise money for Catholic charities. That's the point.
Yes. And it's a time for, it's kind of like a baby roast.
Yeah, it's a chance to like get off the campaign trail and be lighthearted.
Yeah,
make jokes about yourself, make jokes about the other candidate, but not mean spirited.
Right, just kind of light, little levity.
Yeah, and it used to be that way. And even 8 years ago, I remember when McCain and Obama did it, and even Sean Hannity on his show was like, they were both really funny. It was great. It was good to take a night off. Of course, that was a different Sean Hannity and a different time. World. I mean, he was still a prick then, but.
Yep.
Not quite a monster and white nationalist.
Also, it's impossible to make an argument that Barack Obama is not funny.
Yeah.
So, even if you hate him, he has got sense of comedic timing like no other politician.
Yeah, he could get into stand-up if he wanted to.
He very much
after
could.
His presidential days.
He's so
Hillary,
cool.
Not so much, and we're going to get to that.
Yeah. So, the Donald went first.
The Donald went first and started with a decent, okay joke. And you thought, maybe this won't be a train wreck.
And it was a train wreck.
And it was a train wreck. Because immediately after that, he went right off the rails.
Yeah, he got booed, which every pundit I listened to, read, or anything was like, I've never seen anything like it, ever.
Of course, that plays into his whole thing with his base. Look, the elites hate me, and this is a stuffy elite event that I had to go to, but
right. You're
my people, you know, Alabama guy and whatever.
Right. I don't know.
I'm a New York business developer.
Billionaire.
Playboy from Queens.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched him do his bit and her do her bit. I didn't watch any of the other, you know, people talk really, but there's like a bunch of cardinals and bishops and people like in the
unctuous Cardinal Dolan,
like in the background kind of, and there, so they refer to Catholicism a lot, and I don't think there were any pedophile jokes. This would not be a good place for that.
no.
But no, he bombed. Trump bombed. He just wasn't self-deprecating in any way.
And he basically reverted to his stump speech.
Yep. And he,
which you don't do at this event.
No, this is very much like you're supposed to poke fun at yourself.
Right.
And he's a man incapable of doing that.
And the one self-deprecating joke was actually at the expense of his wife.
Correct.
Not even himself.
Right. He made a joke about how everyone keeps telling him to stop saying the election is rigged, but he just wants you to know the media really is rigged. Because, and this was the only good joke, by the way, because in 2008 or 12, Michelle Obama gave this really impassioned speech.
No, you talked about this year. Oh, no, all
right,
okay.
Right, but whenever she, I don't remember which which event it was which she gave it.
I think it was
but,
the 08 one.
Yeah. He's like, so when Michelle Obama gave this speech, everyone loved it and thought it was great. And then when Melania gave the exact same speech, everyone gave her shit for it, basically.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
It's a good line.
And then he tried to do this whole, like, he made her stand up. He was like, stand up, ha ha. It was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
She looked really uncomfortable.
And it turns out he didn't write that joke.
Of course he didn't write that. Nobody wrote any of their own jokes, let's be clear.
Sure.
So, I don't know. He just made comments and things. He just seemed like an unfunny jerk, mostly,
yeah,
who didn't get the point of this. Like, self-deprecation is not a thing I think he understands.
Well, he's not capable of it.
No, yeah. He doesn't understand what it is.
His ego's too big.
Yeah.
To get outside of himself for a hot minute.
Right. I mean, he's a narcissist, so, like, that doesn't compute. So, yeah, he got booed a couple of times, and then Hillary came up and did her thing.
Okay jokes and some really awful, painful jokes.
Yeah, like,
because of her delivery.
Right. So, like, her writers are tremendous. They wrote some really funny jokes. Her delivery of them was not ideal.
The one joke was that Trump, like, everybody looks at the Statue of Liberty and sees a beacon of hope and whatever, and Trump looks at it and sees a four.
Yes.
But her delivery was so awkward and so painful.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't even get the joke at first.
I didn't at first.
Like, wait, oh, I see. Oh, no.
Oh, Hill.
No.
Like, she's not a comedian, and she's not...
No, she's not just her forte. Not,
it's not that, particularly that kind of environment with just a ton of people.
Yeah.
And she's trying to be, you know, casual and funny and relatable.
I mean, she had a couple that were okay, but that one was
really
bad.
The jokes themselves were good. Her team of writers is, like,
but her delivery
on point.
Was,
she's just that's not her strong point at all. And then she quit and said, like, gave kind of an impassioned campaign speech about,
it was more
about
charity.
Yeah, and like, who are we as people? And, you know, it wasn't stump speechy. It was just sort of like, you know, to get serious for a minute, I just want to let you know, like, here's who I am. And I think she'll probably get a lot of shit for that, but I thought it was kind of lovely. Anyway.
She's not going to get any more shit than Trump got for his performance.
Right. He literally got booed.
Yeah.
She got laughs.
Yeah.
At least. She talked about Pope Frank and how great he is. And she's like, I'm not Catholic, but I'm a Methodist. Mm-hmm. And... my running mate Tim Kaine is Catholic, and he and I have talked about a lot of these values and virtues and things, and I thought it was great. I thought she did fine. The joke part, I think, you know, I watch every White House Correspondents' Dinner ever because I love them, but I particularly love Barack Obama's White House Correspondents' Dinners.
Yeah.
Because he is so very funny.
He's great.
He doesn't write his own jokes either.
And one might argue,
can he deliver them.
One might argue that he kicked off this whole Trump for President thing at the Correspondents' Dinner back in 2010 or 12.
Uh-huh.
When he really roasted Trump for his birther shit.
Right.
And it was really
Absolutely.
Funny. And
yes.
Trump just melted down
yes.
at that.
Yes.
And so.
Yes. So I think when Hillary Clinton becomes president, her dinners will be a little more uncomfortable to watch than Barry's have been.
Yeah,
but
well, you know.
I don't care.
Small price to pay for avoiding fascism.
And for having a tremendous and extraordinary woman be the president.
And the first woman president.
And not
United
just
States.
Any woman.
Yeah.
But like an extraordinary and accomplished, brilliant woman. So,
anyway. This is interesting because this just came on Chris Hayes, but the next thing I wanted to talk about... polling.
Yeah, we were going to talk about that.
So the polling right now shows Hillary nationally up by an average of 6 to 8, maybe 5 to 9 if you want to widen that spread.
Okay.
Somewhere in that, which would be a nice sizable victory, similar to Obama's over McCain in 2008.
Okay.
Basically a landslide. We'd like to see it crazier than that.
Yeah.
And there's two schools of thought. There's the Hugh Hewitt school of thought that Trump's going to do a lot better than the polls indicate because of the shy, what they call
right.
the shy Tory, which is taken from UK politics, the shy Trump voter, which to me seems crazy.
Well, that seems like a jumbo shrimp, right? There's no shy. People that are supporting Trump, in my experience, are very happy about that decision and would like to yell about it and wear t-shirts and hats.
Okay, but you know what? In theory, let's say those people, not everybody goes to rallies.
No, I know.
And let's say Aunt Marge in Wisconsin or Iowa really does want to vote Trump, but she can't say it in front of the neighbors because it's just such a horrible thing. And
it's
it
impolite,
turns out that
really.
It's impolite
because
he's so bad, but she actually does want to vote for him. And you know what? The neighbors actually think the same way. So guess what? Come election day, big surprise. Everybody who said they weren't going to vote for Trump so it was so horrible really is in the comfort of
right.
the voting booth where nobody can see. Okay. It's a theory.
Right. And I heard a little backstory on this earlier today in the car. They were talking about back in the 80s and 90s, the only time when polling has really been a little off was when they were polling people about African-American candidates. those candidates tended to poll much better than they actually performed.
Okay, and that was called, what was it called? It was for a mayor of Los Angeles, the something effect.
Yes.
And they, and a lot of people in 2008 said, I don't think Obama's going to win.
Because people aren't actually going to vote for the black guy in the booth, but they did in droves.
Yeah, yeah, they did, just like they said they would.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another theory, and they just showed this graphic with Todd Akin. Remember, Todd Akin said those horrible things about the
illegitimate rape.
And the body can magically shut that down or whatever.
Yep, this is 2012.
Yeah, going against Claire McCaskill in Missouri. Yep. Mm-hmm. And he was already down by a couple points, or it was close, and then the polls opened up and showed McCaskill up by 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about the average, and it looked like, okay, she's going to win by 7 or 8, and it turns out she won by like 15.
Yes.
So the theory there is... that actually the Trump fiasco has become such a train wreck and an embarrassment that a lot of people who thought or want to support him or did support him or think they want to support him aren't going to bother showing up, or they're just not going to bother voting or whatever.
Well, and that's the interesting part too, with his rhetoric around elections being rigged, that the pundits can't seem to wrap their head around is, when you say things like that, it makes your voters less likely to vote.
Yeah.
So what is his impetus for doing that? I don't know. But there's another thing.
Either whining or developing your own, griping TV network. Now, the third theory is that the polls are probably going to match what the final outcome is, and all of the speculation was silly. I think if one theory is more plausible, it would be the second one, that that Trump is going to do worse, a little bit worse maybe.
Yes,
but I don't know.
I have a thing to read really quick. It's not that long, but it's exactly how I feel about this, and it's the opposite of the silent Trump argument. It's the silent Clinton argument. And here's what it says. This is from someone named Dana in Santa Monica and shared from our friend Molly. Pundits and Trump supporters have one thing in common: their scorn of Ms. Clinton and declaration that she's a horrible candidate who's winning by default or treachery. These people have failed to understand until now that Ms. Clinton's unwavering base of support is the silent majority. We women of a certain age love and admire her.
Yeah.
We know she understands us and our issues, and we passionately appreciate everything she's done to claw her place at the top. But we Hillary diehards, we don't show up at large rallies. We've got jobs and kids and aging parents.
Mm-hmm.
We don't troll people on Facebook and Twitter. We're way too busy trying to set an example for our kids to do that. So it's easy to dismiss us as invisible since we are 40. But where you will find us is grinding it out at phone banks and canvassing our neighborhoods, doing the heavy lifting and drudgery that it takes to get a candidate elected. Like Ms. Clinton herself, we are all substance and no flash. We've had disgusting Trump-like bosses grope us. We've been called nasty or worse for asserting ourselves, and yet we persevere. It's a thrilling time to be a woman, as we will single-handedly save this country from Trump and make sure the next president was one of the most qualified and brilliant people to ever hold the office. I'm so proud to be with her. And I think that is absolutely true. When in working with volunteers and working with people on local politics and in national politics too, the people that most consistently come out to canvass, to door knock, to phone bank, to do the hard, boring, tedious work of campaigns are women over 40. White women over 40. For Hillary, for the other candidates that I was working with, more than anyone else. We'd get the occasional, 19-year-old guy who was trying to break into politics, and he'd do a couple weeks and then, burn out.
Right.
But these women, in the middle of raising children and working and...
Families
and homes and parents and all these things, would make that time for 1 or 2 hours a week to come help these candidates.
Yeah, my mom does every election
cycle. Yeah, and these are the people that... the thing I just read is right. They don't come out... They're not trolling people on Facebook and screaming at rallies and all the things, but they're going to vote. You know they are, and they are the people doing the hard work on the ground.
Phone bank and get old people to the polls and all the things.
They're going to drive people to... Exactly, not in Colorado. But yeah, I mean, I think it's true. I think that we sometimes...
Don't tell Mike Pence that.
Right. Underestimate... that section of women that really want Hillary to win. We always talk about how she's so awful, but there are people, and I am one of them, who love her.
Let's talk about the silent majority Clinton voter, because that's all that's talked about. There's been sort of a romanticization of the Trump voter.
Yes.
It's all we talk about.
Yes.
The economic anxious Trump voter.
Yes.
in the Rust Belt and the Midwest, and it's really mostly the South, but
yes.
Some in the Midwest too, in the lightly populated parts of the Midwest. And, you know, there's sort of a fascination, and some of that is born out of the Beltway being, you know, being in the East Coast liberal, they want to relate and they don't want to seem like they're courting off. So they, right. You know, they
and
wanna,
they don't know how.
They don't know how. Mm-hmm. They want to appeal to these people. Oh, mm-hmm. We need to take them seriously and listen to them. And
they have economic anxiety. No, they're racist. But anyway.
Okay. Whatever the reason, they right. are not the silent majority.
No.
Now, I don't
they
know.
Are the loud minority.
Now, I don't necessarily know that that relates to polls, but it certainly relates to coverage.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's that yeah. Article or that story right there that Molly shared and that you just read speaks to that, right?
Yes.
Because there's this idea, and she's absolutely right. And I've heard not only Republican, not only conservative pundits say that, but I've heard left-wing pundits say that.
Democratic politicians I know have said it.
Have said, you know, Hillary's going to win just because Trump's so awful. She's actually a really terrible candidate.
Well, they don't understand that there are people really excited to vote for her.
Of course there are.
A lot of us are not voting against Trump.
Look,
I am voting for Hillary Clinton. I don't give a shit who's running against her.
Despite all the excitement and enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders, which was great and we were part of, Hillary
yes.
won by 4 million votes. That didn't happen in a vacuum.
Right.
And it didn't just happen because a bunch of people rose up and said, geez, we really hate this Bernie Sanders guy.
No, or like there was, but even back then though, there was this argument that like, oh, people are only voting for Hillary because they think Bernie's unviable. And you're like, no, like, no, like people are voting for Hillary because they want to vote for Hillary.
But this has been the story from her all the time, right? It's like these horrible right wing David Bossy talking points have just filtered into everybody. And it's, you know, there's something wrong with her. She's unrelatable. She
right.
why don't people like you? Why is she so unlikable? What is she hiding? Why is she so secretive? You know, in reality, the WikiLeaks stuff that comes out, people realize why they're secretive, because everything they do gets blown up into a scandal.
A scandal
when
that
it's just
not
just being a politician.
Yes.
So
there are, I think, the loud minority are voting for Trump and the silent majority are voting for Clinton. And a lot of us are really excited to do so and are not doing it out of some sense of obligation or a protest vote against Trump or anything else other than she is an incredibly brilliant, qualified, amazing woman who
yeah.
will be a really great president. And some of us are really excited to vote for her.
A lot of us are.
Yeah.
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 And the media doesn't want to accept that because that's not a sexy, interesting narrative.
No. It has to be a vote against Trump or a scared vote or, you know,
or
even
why isn't she winning by 50?
Right, right, right.
So whatever, you know, and so it'll be interesting come 2020, but we'll worry about that in 2020.
Yes. The thing is, when she's in office, people like her a whole lot more than when she's running for it. So she may have a much easier time in 2020 once she's been the president for 4 years.
It's different when you're president. And it also depends on what happens, right?
Yes.
The height of Obama's unpopularity was when the economy was still in a downturn, really until about his reelection.
Yeah.
When it just...
2010, 11,
when it finally
that whole,
started
yeah.
to get the footing under it. And now he's wildly popular.
Yes.
He's got like the highest approval rating since...
And it's so smart of her to
Clinton,
run on that. You know?
Why wouldn't
like,
you?
Because Gore didn't back in 2000.
Well, that's...
You know,
well,
like, she learned that lesson.
That was because of Lewinsky.
But she learned that lesson, and she said,
yeah,
no,
but Obama,
we're going to continue
but
Obama's good work.
There's no Obama sex scandal to run away from, either. So
no.
It's much easier.
Right.
But look, here's the thing, and it goes back to the Trump echo chamber. He's still screaming about how terrible Obama is, and the American public doesn't think that.
No,
you know,
they don't.
They don't buy that.
He's like the highest approval ratings of almost any president at this point in their... term.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Reagan and Clinton were a little better, and maybe FDR. But
I think Clintons were better, were they?
Clintons were up there.
Yeah.
Even after Monica Gate, it was still like in the 60s, I think.
Wow.
His approval rate.
And I think his Obamas are like 55-ish, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've just been a steady ascent, and they're just not
and
declining.
George W. Bush's were in the 30s.
Yeah.
So.
People forget that. I do not.
I do not either.
Yeah. And that's the thing. For all the problems in the economy has recovered to a large extent.
Yes.
There's a lot of problems, as always, not terribly different from the same problems we were talking about in the early 90s.
Yep.
And again, a lot of that is romanticized or blown up, that all these wonderful manufacturing jobs that all went to China because of free trade, which is really not true. It has much more to do with automation
and they're also technology. Never coming back. We should stop talking about them as though it's a possibility.
Right, right. If you're a Trump supporter, President Trump is not going to magically spring up manufacturing all over the country
again. No, not in the way that you think of it, not in the way that you've romanticized not in the past. And making America great again is not going to be from people doing manufacturing jobs in this country. That's never going to happen again. People don't even do a lot of these jobs in other countries. It is automation, like you said, and it's just not realistic. There are jobs that we can create, but it's not going to be your dad's working at Ford in the 40s. It's just not going to be like that ever again, and we have to stop talking about it as though it is.
Well, it's a different economy. We have to stop the debt scaremongering, too, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Getting back to the debate... Chris Wallace dedicated the last half hour or so to the debate to all the debt fear mongering and climate change didn't come up at all.
Nope.
As if having a fiat currency that national debt is somehow going to kill us all when actually the climate is changing and just might.
Yes.
It is so maddening.
Yes.
And, you know.
I know.
What can you
do? I mean, she brought it up herself a couple of times in the previous two debates. Specifically in the last one, she talked about it. She had to bring it up, though. They weren't going to fucking talk about it.
No.
So she had to bring it up and be like, he doesn't believe it's real. He believes it's a hoax, you know, by China and blah, blah, blah. And even then, everyone's sort of just like, anyway, what about that video? And you're like, oh, my God, this is important. Like, this is really important to talk about and understand what his position is and what the crisis that we're in is and what she wants to do. Like, these are things I would really like to hear her say.
Yeah.
But I think the millennial generation and to some extent Gen X are the only generation, us and younger, who give a shit about climate change.
I'm not sure that's true, is it?
I think
the baby boomers just like, we're gonna be dead soon anyway, or
it's like a hoax. My dad told me, he's been telling me this for years.
Yeah, but he's a Republican.
I know, but I'm telling you. He's like, I used to believe in that stuff. Back in the 70s, they told us there was going to be another ice age. And there was all this scare, fear-mongering and all of this scaring of people and all of this telling them all this stuff. And then nothing happened. And I always say to him,
overnight.
Like, first of all, in the 70s, we also passed the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, and we did all of the Superfund stuff, and like there was a lot of environmental change and cleanup that happened. We banned all kinds of like CFCs, like all kinds of things happened in the 70s as a result of, you know, acid rain and like all of this.
Even under Nixon.
Even under Nixon. Nixon passed the Clean Water and Clean Air Act.
Yeah.
So it didn't nothing. It's not that nothing happened. It's that we did a lot of things to fix some stuff.
Right.
And now we have to do that again.
And B, climate change doesn't happen.
Doesn't
overnight.
Happen in 30 years.
Yeah.
No, it does not. Now, it's getting dire.
Your dad doesn't want to believe that the temperatures are rising every year, which we have.
No, it's cyclical and it's just fear mongering and science is made up. So don't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well. How do you argue with that? You can't, really. So.
Well, this candidate's not going to win. But unfortunately, without getting Congress, you know, more involved.
On board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, we have a real shot at getting both houses back.
We're not going to get the house back.
I think
we'll get the Senate back. We're not going to get the House back.
I think we definitely will get the Senate back. I think in Colorado, we're getting both.
There's been too much gerrymandering, I think, to really... it's going to take till 2020
there's
and beyond.
There's a slim possibility.
Of getting the House back?
Yes.
That would have to be some down-ballot carnage that is just not quite showing up in those House race polls.
Yes. Yeah. Correct.
It's just not there.
Yeah.
So it's possible, sure, but... I mean, I'm not seeing it. And
unlikely. And we're definitely going to make some progress there.
Well, here's what could happen. But remember, we talked about if another huge Trump bombshell drops and then those House reps that are running have to take a stand and there's no good stand to take.
Yeah.
Stand with Trump after he dropped the N-word or was proved to rape somebody or ate a baby on tape or whatever.
Right.
or, you know, ditch him, and then all the Trump supporters say, F you, we're not voting for you now. You know, we're going to, at a protest, we're going to vote for the Libertarian or not vote, or even vote for the Democrat, because if they get that spiteful, whatever.
Right.
That's possible.
Yeah.
But I would say without another thing like that happening to really throw those Republicans defending seats into total chaos in the last 18 days, I don't think we have a real shot at flipping the House.
And we're already voting is the other thing. Like, there's early voting in a lot of states. So if something needs to come out, it needs to come out now while people are still turning in their ballots and standing in line. Because we wait till November 2nd.
But the Clinton campaign knows that, right? That's why there's this theory that they are controlling the Oppo dump. They would have dropped it.
Yeah.
It's 18 days left. Right. What are they waiting for?
They're not. The ballots are dropped. People are voting. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So I don't think there's a bombshell
coming. Yeah, right? Like with WikiLeaks is waiting to drop the email that says where Vince Foster's body is.
Right. And like, here's the DNA evidence that Hillary Clinton personally
Here's the Benghazi stand down order.
Yes.
Yeah. No. That's not coming either, guys.
Nope. Would have already happened.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So polls.
Well, I would like them to show Trump down 15.
Me too.
But we're not quite there. We're hovering around 6, 7, 8, depending on which poll you like.
Yeah.
Well, I'm aggregating the polls. Don't cherry pick the polls, obviously.
Right.
There's a lot of bad fly-by-night pollsters out there, too, and everybody's going to jump on them. There was one that came out today that showed Hassan up in New Hampshire by 15. I don't buy that for a second. That's going to be neck and neck.
Okay.
It's really going to depend on turnout.
Okay.
All the polls here for Bennett have been consistently showing him up double digits. He's fine.
Yeah.
Don't think the presidential race is going to be close here either.
Any idea about Morgan Carroll and Kaufman?
I haven't seen any polling.
I haven't either.
I think I saw one poll like a month or 2 months ago Carroll up by 2 or down by 2. Or
yeah, it was close. He was up by a couple points, but within the margin of error.
Yeah.
And then I haven't seen shit since then, so I have no idea how she's doing.
Yeah, we really don't know. I know she's been campaigning pretty hard and pretty well. I saw a few ads.
Yeah.
She's been out there, and I know her. We know her people are knocking doors.
Yes, they are.
His people are too.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. You know, that this could be. Now, I don't know if he's taken a position on Trump. I think he's been kind of standoffish.
So he was pro-Trump, and then after the video, he came out and said, like, I can't stand by those words, blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
And then she tried to tie it to him really hard. And then he started trying to do a couple of Spanish language things that didn't go well.
Why does he sort of speak?
He's trying and it's not going great. He's no Tim Kaine, let's say.
Yeah.
And also, like, he's like really anti-immigration. And if you don't know, Colorado has a really large Latino population, Latinx population.
A very heavy Spanish-speaking only population, which most pollsters don't bother with.
Correct.
And when you see those polls that don't bother with it, guess what? They show a close race.
When you go out and knock doors and you got a translator and you talk to these people who speak Spanish only, they want to talk about Trump right now want you to know they're voting.
Yes.
Like, they are a very fierce population of people who are voting.
Same with Arizona. And when you see the polls in Arizona and Colorado and Nevada,
do not reflect those people.
Well, the ones that do include the Spanish-speaking prompters.
Yeah.
They show Hillary up comfortably.
Yeah.
The ones that don't show close races.
Yep.
And, you know, they still haven't quite figured that out yet.
Right.
They're still, you know, haven't gotten around to that yet. So I think Hillary's going to win Nevada and Colorado easily. Arizona's going to be tight. I mean, the last week of polling's looked really good for her, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Right.
But I do know that they've registered Hispanics in Arizona over the last 2 years. They've really made a huge effort to do that.
Yes.
To get...
As has Colorado.
Immigrant populations that usually just sit out. They don't bother voting.
Or they think they can't.
And this was even before Trump.
Right.
They were doing this huge outreach to get Latinos to vote. And now Trump comes along and that's just a double whammy.
I
think you're going to see participation way higher than people anticipated.
I agree.
Think you're going to see margins way higher than people anticipated.
I agree.
I could be wrong about that, but I don't think I am.
I agree.
And
at least in places where I've talked to actual voters, and I don't speak Spanish, but we had a couple of lovely people that would come volunteer and translate, and we would talk to these people, or like the kid, you know, the daughter or the son or whatever, right, would translate right. for the mom or whoever. And let me tell you,
they're
like,
voting.
They don't want to know anything coming out of my mouth until they hear that I'm not voting for Trump, that my candidate's not voting for Trump, that this campaign's not about Trump. Like they're like, Trump or no? And I'm like, no. And they're like, okay, good. I'm voting and I'm not voting for him. And I'm like, great.
And
great.
Guess what? Every ballot comes in English and Spanish.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think it'll be interesting in populations where there's a larger percentage of people who are Latino or Hispanic, and I think the pollsters are not taking that into account.
Some of them are, yeah. Not all of them.
Yeah.
Now, that's going to be interesting in Colorado, in Arizona. New Mexico never really was that close anyway. Did I mention Nevada?
Nevada, yeah.
And Florida, too, for this reason. Now, that's a big Cuban-American population.
Right, that's a whole other...
Who's now mixed.
Yeah.
They used to be solidly Republican.
Right.
But a ton of Puerto Ricans have moved to Florida over the last year.
Okay.
Now, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. So mm-hmm. they're citizens. They go ahead and they register to vote. They do not like Trump one bit.
No, I know.
So there's been something like close to 1 million or so.
Wow.
New Puerto Ricans who have fled because the Puerto Rican economy is terrible and gone to Florida.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big difference. And
wow.
A lot of that, it doesn't show up in the poll, too, because they're newly registered voters. And a lot of these likely voter screens screen out people who didn't vote last time.
Right. That's how you get a likely voter.
Right. This is why Gallup in 2012 kept showing these polls Romney plus 7, Romney plus 6, Romney plus 7. Because it was counting out all these young voters.
People who...
you know, yeah. Just like all of them. It was a ridiculous... Like, it was like a 7-point screen and I scored a 4. Like, wow. I needed to be a 7 to be a likely voter. It was like, oh, Gallup, you think I'm not voting? God only knows.
Right.
And so that's
because you had moved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're mobile, you know, and anybody on a college campus didn't fit into their screening questions.
Right.
So.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I think they've changed it now, but I haven't really seen, does Gallup even do a presidential tracker? I haven't seen theirs.
I haven't seen it.
I don't know if they do it.
I don't know.
Oh, a bunch of other people do now, so.
Pew was on NPR today talking about polling and, you know, how remarkably accurate it actually is, regardless of outliers and regardless of what people tend to want to believe or not believe
about
polling.
Well, the aggregate of polling.
That polling is generally always found to be remarkably accurate.
Well, it depends
on
whose poll.
Yes. Yeah, like, I think they were probably talking about their own, but
yeah,
in
the Pew poll's pretty good. But
in general,
I did a post 2012 breakdown of the Rasmussen poll, of PPP, and of Nate Silver's, you know, conglomeration of all the polls, the way he weights them,
right?
And
I read it.
Yeah, Rasmussen was often way off, and usually way off in favor of Romney. And PPP was actually a little bit tiny, but skewed towards Romney even, but very accurate.
Yeah.
Pretty damn accurate. And Nate Silver pretty much nailed it.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, they said the one big mistake he's really ever made was not predicting Donald Trump as the primary winner. Because he did not.
But, okay, look.
But that's insane.
That's not the polls, though. That was all the pundits just said, you're not actually, no, I can't believe they're actually going to vote for this guy, even though the polls
kept
saying,
the same thing.
Yeah, we're going to vote for this guy.
We said the same thing on this podcast. We were making bets for when he would have to drop out.
But that's my point. When Nate Silver releases his final numbers in a couple weeks, it's not going to be, okay, I think this is who's going to win. He's going to say, this is what the numbers say.
Yes.
And his numbers in 2012 were very accurate.
Yes. Remarkably.
His off-year congressional stuff isn't as sharp, but that's tougher.
Because people don't vote?
That's tougher to poll, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's tougher to figure turnout. It's tougher to do all the things in off-years.
But he was still pretty accurate. Not, you know, as accurate as 2012, but yeah. No, I think, I mean, he's showing that, like, she's going to win for sure.
So are all of the reputable aggregators at this point.
Yeah.
So it would take quite a bit to change that. I don't think there's time. And I think if there's another big shoe to drop, not that the WikiLeaks and everybody's going to try to manufacture something every day that's supposedly a big scandal and just hope something sticks.
Right.
But there could be another big shoe to drop from about Trump. Although it's going to have to happen in the next few days if it's going to happen, right?
Yeah,
I mean, I guess the Bush drunk driving thing came out like a couple days before the election back in 2000, and nobody cared.
Yeah, I remember getting some kind of mailer. I was still living with my parents because I was not old enough to vote by like a couple of months in 2000. And we got some mailer about that a couple days before the election, and I was like, well, that just seems like grabbing at straws at this point. Like, that just seems like we can't prove if it's true or not now that it's 2 days out. And like, no, but I was only 17, but I was like, I don't buy it.
But he was drunk and he like drove into a bush or something. Like,
and it doesn't matter because when you're a Christian politician, you doesn't really matter what you've done in your past as long as you're born again. Yeah, exactly. So as long as you're born again, it doesn't matter what you've done.
And that didn't catch on at all. Nothing. It didn't move the needle at all. So it's almost like there's been so much chaff thrown up, like what could really make a difference?
The only thing
not
any
more accusers, because we have like a new one every day.
Right. The only thing that I've seen is that video of him, that audio and video of him. That's the one thing that I think has shaken this election up the most of anything. And that
had a larger effect than the actual women coming out and saying, yeah, he did this.
Of course it did. Because you can't believe them, but you cannot, you watched him say it.
And a lot of people were offended just by the language. Aunt Marge was probably more offended by the language.
But also, impossible to deny. Sure. You cannot be like, these people have ulterior motive. It doesn't matter. You can't. There's nothing you can say. You're listening to and watching him say these things
right. That
are impossible to deny. Women are easy to not believe, apparently.
Especially when it comes to describing sexual assault, right? Yeah.
Yep.
You know, the media didn't really latch on to the women's stories that much. They kind of got bored of it after a day.
Look at Cosby. They didn't give a shit then either. They would just keep the tally going, but never tell the woman's story.
No.
Oh, yeah, some other woman came out with Cosby shit from 20 years ago, whatever. Like, that's how they treated it. Ask me. I don't know why it doesn't matter. It matters to me.
It should matter to everybody. And it
matters to me.
No one's really talking about that anymore. Nope. And it was just a couple days ago, you know, a week that this all broke. Mm-hmm. And this should be the round the clock. I mean, imagine if this was 1968.
Yeah.
That's all anybody would be talking about.
Yeah.
And granted, part of that is Trump has so much crap to talk about. But, I mean, sexual assaults of women and a major presidential candidate should be a big round-the-clock story.
He raped a 13-year-old girl, and there are two witnesses.
Okay, that they're not even going to touch till after the election.
There's been a couple of little bits here and there since we talked about it on the podcast a couple weeks ago.
Not on MSNBC, not on any of the major networks,
nope.
Not on CNN,
nope.
Not on the New York Times.
No. Yeah. Two witnesses.
Well, that's going to be part of the post-election world. You got Trump. He's going to have his day in court with Judge Curiel in the Trump U case.
Yep.
He's being sued by a lot of these women.
Mm-hmm.
He's the rape case against the 13-year-old girl.
The civil case, yep, is going forward. To court. And her attorney came out with a statement last week that said he will absolutely be on the stand and be asked to answer for the allegations. So they're not taking a plea. They're not a settlement. They're not going to do it.
Well, at least you're saying that. I mean, you play that leverage.
Yep, you sure do.
But
and you play it in the media and you scare the shit out of him.
Sure. And he's probably going to end up in court for the Trump Foundation.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only so many AGs you can pay off. And then, like, can't pay, somebody gets
pissed. He didn't pay off
enough.
The New York AG.
Yeah.
Because no he's joke. The one bringing the charges.
Yeah.
So there's all that, and it's I don't think any people can process it all.
I think I
know. They just get bits and pieces of it.
Yeah.
And in a lot of people's mind, it's sort of equal to something Hillary email something.
And at this point, I think even my most seasoned pals, we are all beginning to tune out a little bit because of just utter
the disgust,
exhaustion, and like trauma and anxiety and stress and of this thing. Like, I'm at this point where I'm consuming a couple hours of news and social media a day, and like I can't do any more than that without having to, like, serious, like, I'm not kidding, like, serious self-care. Like, go take a bath and calm down. And take a little Xanax or, like, you know what I mean? Like, literal self-care just based on the periphery of this election.
Maybe that'll be his next suit. We should have a class action suit against Trump.
Seriously, I would like to sue him for my therapy bills. All of them. I would think that he should pay for everyone in the United States to have had therapy this entire time. And certainly if he gets elected, he should.
Well, that's, I was just about to say, remember when we found the prospect of a Mitt Romney presidency so unappealing?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Just because he was a douchey, elitist, tax cutting for rich, anti-choice guy.
At least he paid taxes.
Sort of, a little bit.
Yeah.
He very reluctantly released his taxes eventually.
He was a Mormon, and he didn't like women very much, and he had binders full of them.
He had binders full of them.
Mm-hmm. I'll take it.
If it was Romney, if it was Romney Trump, I would be out canvassing for Mitt Romney.
Oh, my God. Me too. And I hate that guy.
I know. I'd totally be like...
He's a smug asshole.
You have to vote for this guy.
Yeah. You have. It literally doesn't matter. It could be my niece. It can be Mickey Mouse. It can be literally anyone that is not Donald Trump. That's the truth. But let's go back. That's not why I'm voting for Hillary Clinton.
No, it's not. And that's the perception. That's how we all feel.
It's not. I think she's extraordinary. And I think she's going to make an extraordinary president. And I really do. I really believe that. She has the political capital, which people don't talk about. She has these connections for people for years and years and years. People owe her favors, and they know her, and they trust her. And she will be able to get shit done in a way that I think Obama couldn't in his first term, because he didn't have the same things that she has. Not to mention her level of knowledge, her skill set.
Because Obama had both houses of Congress.
Yeah, he did. One thing out of that.
But he was staving off a huge financial crisis.
Yes, he was.
So.
And he really, I really believe that his lack of experience inside of Washington hurt his couple of years.
Maybe, but he put all his capital into passing
Obamacare.
I'm
telling you, this is my opinion. I do think that he did. Everything he had, he put into Obamacare. Yeah. And even that was not what he wanted.
No.
Because he just didn't have the capacity to call upon favors and to try to... I just don't think that he was as effective in his first couple of years as she would have been in terms of political capital and being able to call on these people that she's known for 30 years that owe her some fucking favors, that he didn't have any of that.
Well,
and
he was only in the Senate 4 years. She was in the Senate 8, and then...
She was in the White House, and she was in the State Department. Like, she knows everybody.
Yeah.
So I think she's going to do some great things. I really do. And I'm excited to vote for her.
And the Republicans outside of the crazy Freedom Caucus people actually...
Really like respect her. Anyone who's ever worked with her has said, oh, she's great to work with. Everyone. So.
Of course, that doesn't mean they're going to work with her. I mean, I think they're going to shut down the government.
They might. But a black dude and then a lady? Are you kidding me?
Well, it's just that the Freedom Caucus types are going to be beside themselves.
Yeah.
And they're going to try to, first they're going to try to pillory Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
And then God knows what
they're
going to
blame him
that.
For Trump losing because they had that bicker.
Oh, God, yeah.
And that's going to be his fault that Hillary's president. And
well, that's the thing. People are going to... A lot of our anti-Trump conservative friends are like, fine, this will be the great repudiation. We can take our party back. It's like,
no,
dude,
I don't think so.
Your party's going to blame you.
Yep.
I mean, Sean Hannity is telegraphing it.
Yep.
As are other members of Congress.
Yeah.
So, your civil war is just beginning.
Yes, exactly. This is the beginning.
Yeah. Well, now, we thought it was going to be the crazy right-wing evangelical wing versus the warmongering tax cut wing.
Yep.
Nope. But no, it's Trump wing.
Versus everybody.
Versus everybody else.
Yes.
So, man.
Okay. Yeah.
That'll be interesting to watch, but...
We only have, how many? Two more of these podcasts before the election?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Isn't that crazy?
Two more before the election. The last one will probably be just in a complete drunken stupor.
Yes. Sorry about that.
There's 18 days. Who knows what might happen before then.
And then we're not going to podcast on election night.
No, we're not going to do that. We're just going to drink heavily.
Yes. And then we'll podcast that Friday.
Yeah.
We can decompress after the 4 days has passed. But You'll hear from us in the next 2 weeks.
My closing thought is kind of this. I thought that Trump was going to just go out in a blaze of glory and be really crazy over these last 2 weeks and really conspiratorial and just say the craziest shit you can imagine. And the last couple of days, it kind of looks like he's just fed up. Like, I mean, he's still campaigning and he's still yelling about Hillary's corrupt and they're going to steal the election, but...
He seems dispassionate.
You think?
Yeah, he does. He seems tired and he knows he's going to lose.
But every time we think he looks like that, he turns around and ups the crazy.
Yep.
So, I don't know.
I don't either. But, I'm done predicting with this election. I don't know. We'll find out, I guess, next week. We'll let you know.
Yep. All right. That's going to do it for us. Thanks for sticking around with us again. Check us out on Twitter at Irreverent Duo. Hate mail, irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. And anything else, Rich?
Be good to yourself. Self-care. This sucks. It's almost over.
Hang in there. Almost done. Stay active. Stay tuned. Stay involved as much as you can. And good night. She said, "You're..."